Welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. From the Arts Desk, the Muncie Three Trails Music Series continues September 5th at Cannon Commons in downtown Muncie with three-time Grammy nominee Junior Brown. His music is featured in the Breaking Bad spinoff Better Call Saul. Opening will be Fort Wayne's rockabilly ace Tilford Sellers. Elsewhere, local theater company Think Dog Productions is hosting a September 11 event at Valhalla with a performance of Ann Nelson's play, The Guys. All proceeds from the performances will be donated to Muncie Firefighters Donation Fund and Fallen Heroes Memorial Bridge Fund. More details at the Think Dog Productions page on Facebook. Our topic today, film noir, the movie style developed in the 1940s and 50s, featuring tales of hard-bitten characters, a visual look often dominated by moody, dark shadows. Does this sound familiar? Soundtrack from The Maltese Falcon, 1941, starring Humphrey Bogart as Sam Spade. Here, Bogey parlays with the menacing Sidney Greenstreet.
Mr. Spade, have you any conception of how much money can be got for that blackbird?
No.
Well, sir, if I told you. I told you half. You'd call me a liar.
No, not even if I thought so. But you tell me what it is, and I'll figure out the profit.
This is fascinating stuff for movie buffs. A Ball State University online course on this subject just ended in August. More than 16,000 people signed up. This was a partnership with Turner Classic Movies and part of TCM's Summer of Darkness Film Festival. The online multimedia course was called TCM Presents Into the Darkness, Investigating Film Noir. The class was developed by Richard Edwards, executive director of Ball State's iLearn Research, and a very fun person with whom to talk about movies.
Film noir is something that's very difficult to define. For the last 70 years, scholars and fans have been trying to come up with a definition of what film noir is, and we're probably no closer today than we were 70 years ago. Overall, what I tend to think of when someone asks me, define film noir, is that there were a certain number of films that started to be made in the early 1940s that felt very different from other detective and crime thrillers that had been made in the 1930s. These films seemed to have a grittier substance. They seemed to have a more excessive style. They seemed to be telling this crime story in new and different ways. And what happens is there are all these films being made during World War II, mostly around the crime thriller, films like The Maltese Falcon, Laura, Double Indemnity, and critics in the U.S. are starting to pick up on that something is happening in Hollywood. But it's not until 1946 in France that a couple film critics, Nino Franck and Jean-Paul Cartier, are actually seeing these films all at once. During World War II, Hollywood films were embargoed in France. And so critics like Franck and Chartier were able to see hundreds of films in a very compressed time period, and they were able to start to see how these films like The Maltese Falcon and Double Indemnity were different. At the same time, it was very popular in France that they were translating the hard-boiled novels of Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett, and they were calling these books, when they were translated into French, série noire, the noir series of hard-boiled literature. And when Nino Franck was looking for a term to talk about these new dark and bleak crime thrillers, he coined the term film noir. So a very American film style has a very French name.
What's a starting point for someone interested in experiencing this?
Well, the starting point for me is really to watch these films from the early 1940s. It's impossible to ever say what the very first film noir is, but one that is frequently looked at as an early high point that started to signal something was changing in Hollywood is John Huston's 1941 film, The Maltese Falcon, starring Humphrey Bogart in his iconic role as Dashiell Hammett's great private eye, Sam Spade. So if you're going to really start somewhere, I usually recommend people start with the Maltese Falcon. It has really those core elements that we begin to associate with film noir. It's the hard-boiled detective going as a kind of tarnished knight, going into a more corrupt world, neither wholly bad nor wholly good, at the heart of this mystery that is being propelled by fate. And at the heart of the Maltese Falcon, we have one of our great adventures of all time, as characters like Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre, along with Humphrey Bogart and Mary Astor, are all chasing, you know, the iconic Maltese Falcon, which is this literal object that the stuff that dreams are made of. So I really like people to start there. If you really want to see like where the noir style really starts to come together in ways that starts to influence dozens of films, I always recommend people look at Billy Wilder's 1944 film, Double Indemnity, starring the great Fred McMurray and the brilliant Barbara Stanwyck. This is a film that has it all. It's written by Billy Wilder and Raymond Chandler. It is really one of these stories that has a genuine femme fatale, this dangerous woman that's going to upset the balance of power in the film.
And can we tell people that he works for an insurance company? She wants to, I mean, just in two sentences, you get.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, what's so great about it is it's based on a story by James M. Cain, and it deals with this issue of an insurance agent who goes on a sales call one day to sell insurance to a woman's husband, and they quickly fall into a love affair that results in the idea to plot a man's murder. And the entire story is told in flashback. And that's one of the hallmarks of film noir. Like, if you haven't seen a lot of film noir, these are stories that frequently start at the end. They start with the character having literally lost everything, and then the story is the retelling of how they got to that point. And Double Indemnity is just so great at that, because you have Fred McMurray, literally telling his dark tale into a dictaphone, and we in the audience are along for the ride, and what a tremendous ride it is.
Richard Edwards of Ball State, who taught this summer's class on film noir in a partnership with Turner Classic Movies. You pretty much get the idea from the titles of these films, movies like The Killers, DOA, Kiss Me Deadly, Touch of Evil.
Indiana Weekend, Real Radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com.
So if we were to make a list of some of the most common elements of these, there's the moody lighting and there's just the look of these.
Well, it's always tough. I mean, see, part of what is so interesting when you're talking about noir is the first thing that tends to grab audiences is the style. I mean, there's no doubt that in the classic Hollywood period of the 1940s and 50s, the films of film noir are some of the most gorgeous films made in black and white. These were films that used deep focus photography, that used shadows that were more than night, that used night for night shooting to create just this real overwhelming mood and atmosphere that just is amazing to look at. They had amazing sound designs, especially related to the role of jazz music. They had editing that really advanced our ability to tell these stories that used flashback and complicated narratives. They had amazing costume design. These were worlds in which the characters were constantly in motion, and the mise-en-scene itself was animated with cigarette smoke, with, you know, tough talk and, amazing faces. But the style is only one part of why I think we still revisit noir 70 years later. As beautiful as these films are to look at, they have a thematic heft and they have a substantive depth as stories that still cling to us even 70 years later. These were stories that were told at a time when America was very anxious. We had just come out of World War II. We were entering into the Cold War, the communist witch hunts, and the paranoia of the 1950s, along with the rise of corporate and consumer culture. These were anxious times in America, and these were stories that we were telling ourselves almost as myths to help us understand these radical shifts and disruptions and dislocations that were happening in everyday life. And I think we can go back and look at these because these are not the romantic happy endings of the Hollywood era. These are films that were much more realistic, much closer to the ordinary feelings of discomfort and anxiety that ordinary Americans were feeling. And I think when we watch these films today, we start to see certain parallels with how we feel about culture today. One of the things that I frequently say about film noir is it's the house style of cultural anxiety. These are the films we watch when we as a culture are worried about things because they help us process our emotions by playing them out on the screen.
Are you sensing a renewed interest in film noir?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, noir is something that's never gone out of vogue over the last 70 years. Part of what I think is so fascinating about film noir is even when we struggle to define it, it's the type of film that really, if you turned it on TV today, you would know it if you saw it. There's very few people who can watch films like Out of the Past, The Killers, DOA, Kiss Me Deadly, Touch of Evil, and go, boy, those look like Westerns or musicals to me. I mean, we know they're films noir. But what was so amazing is these films were so powerful, they then led European filmmakers in the early 60s, especially in the French New Wave, to make their type of hard-boiled crime thriller, films like Jean-Luc Godard's Breathless or François Truffaut's Shoot the Piano Player. Those films then influenced the young film school generation in the late 60s. So filmmakers like Martin Scorsese make films like Mean Streets and Taxi Driver that really are part of this lineage of film noir. And then you get into the 1980s where we start to have a nostalgia about film noir. And we have films like Body Heat that really start to advance the art form yet again. And even today, ever since 9/11, we've really started to see, again, because it's the house style of cultural anxiety, a lot of filmmakers making films in the noir style and in the noir genre. So you get films like Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, or you get films like Robert Rodriguez's Sin City films, as yet another element of where noir never really dies. It just keeps coming back in different and more innovative forms.
Would that be neo-noir?
Yes. I mean, properly, most scholars would call this newer cycle the neo-noir film cycle. But ultimately, you know, I'm not as obsessed myself with labels as trying to understand within the perspective of a cinematic storyteller. So I'm a filmmaker and I'm looking for a story I want to tell. Well, there's literally millions of stories I can tell. Some filmmakers are drawn to this sliver of filmmaking that deals with these bleak themes, with these hard-boiled characters, with these twists of fate in a nihilistic universe. And when people are drawn towards that, I constantly will always say that's part of the noir vein of filmmaking. And while its classic version happened in the 1940s and 50s, you can still be a noir filmmaker today. It won't be the same. I mean, you're in a different production context, a different cultural era. But neo-noir has tended, again, to be a term that, has been used by many scholars to help designate the difference. But for me, as a fan of these films, I'm less concerned with labeling them as much as just honestly enjoying them and appreciating that this style of filmmaking is still finding new stories 70 years later, and I think that's just thrilling.
Richard Edwards, executive director of Ball State's iLearn Research, who taught an online multimedia class this summer on film noir. More than 16,000 people signed up. These are movies like The Maltese Falcon, Double Indemnity, Touch of Evil, and in a more recent variation, Blade Runner. He points out there are some very good noir films in the public domain, which you can find in a YouTube search, including Detour, DOA, and The Lady from Shanghai.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
Is there an element sometimes of using these techniques to tell stories in other settings? Ridley Scott, Blade Runner.
Yeah.
That, dark, moody.
Right. No, it's fascinating because when you start to get into thinking about noir, as we talked about already, the style is very powerful. A lot of filmmakers who really want to demonstrate their mastery over the cinematic medium choose noir because it really takes a lot of talent to manipulate all of these elements of lighting and editing and set design and musical design. And one of the areas where a lot of people, I think, today are familiar with the noir aesthetic are in a subgenre that I would call science fiction noir. And you have films like Blade Runner, Dark City, in which you have these universes that are clearly science fiction universes versus the film noir universe is actually usually the urban jungle of mid-40s and mid-50s America. But they take that style, they like the bleak nihilistic worldview, so they want that in the science fiction film as well. And then they run with it. And it's exciting. In a film like Blade Runner, which I think is a very strong example of how film noir can be reconsidered in light of science fiction elements, you get a masterful film that is a blend of two very different genres, the crime thriller and the science fiction fantasy. And what glues it together is both the soulfulness of the noir story, that there has to be some human element, there has to be some ultimate meditation on loss, decay, despair at the heart of Blade Runner. Otherwise, it would just be style in the service of no substance.
Touch of Evil. You have elements of some of these films that everybody thinks of, the long tracking opening shot in Touch of Evil, the looming Orson Welles, Charlton Heston as a Mexican detective.
Yes. No, Touch of Evil is a fascinating film. I mean, it's always interesting when you start to think about film noir in the classic era. If the cycle kicks off in 1941 with John Huston's Maltese Falcon, a lot of people ask, when did the cycle start to end? You know, what are some of the last films of classic Hollywood? And in that spirit, a lot of people point towards a 1958 film by Orson Welles, Touch of Evil, as the last film noir of the classic cycle. And you can start to ask yourself, why would a certain, you know, cycle run its course? Well, we're looking at maybe several hundred films made over a very compressed 17-year period in Hollywood in which they're constantly pushing and innovating the stories. They're trying to tell stories, especially as the 1950s progress, that are even more bleak, that are even more grim, in which the world shown on screen is even more bitter than the world of even 10 years earlier. And there is a point at which that type of storytelling, one could argue, begins to exhaust itself. There's only so far you can take that before a certain awareness of that story, that you become so clearly defined by that story that you're now manipulating that story in ways that are different than telling the original story of the Maltese Falcon. I think we find a lot of elements of that in Touch of Evil. Orson Welles had already made several masterful films noir in the 1940s. He made a film during World War II, The Stranger, and Journey into Fear, uncredited with some co-direction. And then he makes a masterpiece, 1946's The Lady from Shanghai. And when he makes the Touch of Evil, he's really now recognizing that the cycle has started to run its course, but he's not done playing with the film noir universe. So Touch of Evil famously opens with a 3.5-minute single edit tracking shot in a U.S.-Mexico border town that is just absolutely a masterwork of cinematic technique. He pushes everything in that film to its logical extreme. The heavies are heavier than in other films. The corruption runs deeper and is more systemic. The resolution is even more impossible to ever recognize that any good might be able to come out of the type of universe that's being concocted on screen. And a lot of people then feel that after a film like Touch of Evil, there's not really that much farther for filmmakers to take the cycle. And then, as I said, I really think it was at that point that the baton of film noir was really handed over to the European filmmakers. And filmmakers such as Godard and Truffaut and Melville were really inspired by a film like Touch of Evil. And you can see elements of that film in many great French films between 1959 and 1963.
Let's walk through some other examples. Detour, DOA, yeah, and Hitchhiker. Do you want to start with Detour?
Yeah, Detour is a fascinating film. So part of what's fun when you're talking about film noir is one of the elements of style that if you're not that familiar with filmmaking is style can come on the cheap. If you don't have great sets, if you don't have a great script, if you don't have a lot of budget, well, it's not that expensive to make shadows. It's not that expensive to shoot at night. It's not that expensive to play tricks with the camera. And so Edgar Ulmer, the director of Detour, is very famous and sometimes is referred to as the king of the B films, because a film like Detour was shot in just a couple of weeks on a very small budget. It probably, in all reality, had 1/8 of the budget of a film like Double Indemnity. So he shot it fast and he shot it cheap. But oh boy, over its 67-minute running length, it's a masterpiece.
Richard Edwards of Ball State, who taught this summer's class on film noir in a partnership with Turner Classic Movies. This was part of TCM's Summer of Darkness Film Festival. The online multimedia course was called TCM Presents Into the Darkness, Investigating Film Noir. It ended earlier this month, but you can still see the website at Turner Classic Movies, and some of these films are in the public domain at YouTube, including some of Dr. Edwards' favorites like DOA and The Lady from Shanghai. And that, friends, is our show for this week. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture of Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flexsteel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.